Welcome to the Searchers Roadmap. I'm Rhonda Harrison, your host, and our guest today is Kimba Arum, who works with sound healing and has worked with Dr. Andrew Weil as well throughout part of her experience. So if you would just give her your attention as she's going to talk to us about how vibrational healing has helped her in her own personal life and how she's seen it work in other people's lives. We're at the Cross-Cultural Conference in Boulder, Colorado on 26th and Canyon. It's been a beautiful conference and an amazing healing modality for those of us that have come and are experiencing it. And there's still a couple more ceremonies left, so if you'd like to come, it doesn't end until after 6 o'clock. And there are healing sessions available to the public through some of the healers that are here. And with that, I will introduce Kimba Arum, who you live here in Boulder, am I correct?
Yes.
And how long have you been doing sound healing or work with sound and vibration?
Well, for at this point, it's in 2014, about 18 years, specifically in this field.
And how did you get started?
I'll try to kind of summarize a very long story if I went into any detail. But the, you know, as a child, music was always my medicine. I didn't think of it as medicine, but I was trained in classical piano and flute. My parents allowed me to have lessons. And this was something that I did for me. I didn't have to practice. I wanted to practice. And so I would go and play music for my own, because I'm not a very, I've always been a very sensitive person. I just came in the world that way. And I got easily overwhelmed. So for me, music, you know, we'd have gatherings or parties, and I would go walk into the room and play music. And piano is mainly what I loved. And so growing up, I didn't think of that as my life career, because I always thought musicians, you stand in front of people and you perform and everybody looks at you and they clap. And I didn't like that kind of attention. Right. I never was. I'm an introvert, you know, so I don't get energy from that. So what I, you know, growing up, I decided to go into study molecular biology, which, you know, was my college focus. And then near the end of my training, I decided, well, I want to kind of move from science into helping people more, because my parents are both very service-oriented, and I love nature, which is why I was studying molecular biology. So this is how I found my natural way of being in the academic world. And so near the end, I decided I was going to go to medical school, so I started to take pre-med, and I was very academically oriented all through college. And I barely had time for music, really. But whenever I could get to a piano, I would still play. But I was on this track, you know, I'm going to be a medical doctor. And because my dad was a medical doctor, and we always had a doctor in the family. It was kind of a lineage thing. And they never specifically told me what to do, but you know, my brother went into music. We have a very musical lineage anyway. But so I'm like, okay, my brother's not going in this direction. I guess I'm going to be the doctor of the family. This is all unconscious stuff, which I was not aware of at all. So in the last semester before my graduation, I had this experience. And this is the part where if I go into this, we'll be here for hours. This experience. But I called it my awakening at the time. This was my last semester. It was in 1992. I was 21, just about to graduate. At the top of my class, in honors, you know, working two jobs in college, you know, pre-med, left brain world. I had this experience, and I did not know until about a couple of years later, because after this experience, I started to read voraciously, because I didn't have any context for what I had experienced. My parents thought I was nuts. I didn't fit into the world I had totally been born into, and the friends I had, the world I was living, didn't make any sense to me. But what I realized when I came upon Raymond Moody's book called Life After Life, and I read it, I was like, this was a near-death experience, because it had all of the classic elements of what people go through during this, what happens when we step outside of our limited consciousness into the vast world of spirit, basically. But it was absolutely a near-death experience. But I still called it my awakening because I was given a life review, and I was given a life preview also. Because when you step outside of time, it's almost like time is an object almost, and you can just see it in its entirety. It's not a linear thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can absolutely, and the life review and preview doesn't unfold like a series of pictures in a movie playing mm-hmm. themselves out. It's not like that. You see it as an object. It's like a hologram. Mm-hmm. And your mind is in this place where it's kind of like the mind of God in a way. This is how the divine sees, which we're a part of.
Right.
So when we're in that place and we look at our life and we're like, wow, this is me. This is this piece, me, God. This is this piece of God. And when I was shown the preview of when I would die, which would have been last year, 42, at the time I was 21, so I knew that on the track I was on, the way I ate, the way I moved, the way I believed, the way I thought, everything, the direction I was going, this boulder rolling down the hill of my karma, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have any of this language back then. This is 22 years
right.
of assimilating that experience. I had zero language for it. I was like a baby because there was no context for me at the time. But so I'm talking about it now. But, you know, I was like, okay, you have a choice, you know, and it was kind of like I was given a choice to stay or come back, but my soul knew that I wasn't done.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of wasn't a choice, but it kind of was,
mm-hmm.
in a weird way, this paradoxical kind of way. But my choice was, I guess, to come back and pretend it didn't happen, which I don't even think that could be a choice, or to radically change the direction of my life,
mm-hmm.
which was, I mean, choice is such a funny word because we have free will, right, which is
mm-hmm.
the odd thing about humans, apparently, and planet Earth. But that free will gives us choice, and we can choose how we perceive reality and what we do with our life moment to moment to moment. And so what got activated in this awakening, I call it, was my will woke up. And it was like, okay, this is your future. Is that what you want? I was like, no way. So what I saw was that even though I had a semester left to graduate, there was no way in God's creation I was going to be a medical doctor. It wasn't my heart's path. Because what also activated an experience was my heart, the awareness of heart is my center, not my mind, which is what academia teaches us. I was born in the Western world. I was raised on big meth. I didn't know how to take care of myself, at least to live a healthy and long life, which is what is our destiny or our birthright. So I had no idea how to do this, but I knew that I had to learn. So I became the biggest eternal student of that day of my awakening, which continues.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel that way. I still realize I know nothing. But I feel like wisdom comes out of that not knowing place. It's also a funny paradox.
Mm-hmm.
Life is paradox. And the Tao, I think, is that middle ground. And if we can just live right in the middle of knowing and not knowing and doing and not doing, then we're kind of, that's where we want to be. That's
right.
The Tao. That's how water moves. So that's kind of what I stepped into at this awakening. And so although I knew I was going to go to medical school or use my science background, you know, sitting behind a microscope dissecting rats or whatever
right.
for the sake of research,
right.
Which is just like little kids playing, the way I look at it now, it is that I had to finish my degree. And I realized in retrospect the reason I had to finish my degree was I was walking to class one day, and I was going to organic chemistry and melting into trees on the way. I developed a very interesting relationship with trees after this awakening. I would be magnetized to them, and I would melt into them. I couldn't pass a tree without getting sucked into it. Never had, and this was like, I was not in this world for years after this experience. I was very much still between spirit world and in my body, which is good, but difficult to assimilate. That's why my parents thought I was crazy for a while, until I met Dr. Weil.
Right.
But we'll get into that.
Yeah.
He was a great ally because he was at the U of A where I was going to
school.
So, but I was going to organic chemistry, and I saw this lady on campus, and she was sitting, you know, a hippie type doing hair wraps, which is you wrap mm-hmm. like thread into the hair, and she had this, and she wasn't in school there, but she was sitting on campus, mm-hmm. and she had this long wooden instrument next to her. And I looked, I was drawn to her, magnetized to that more than her. Mm-hmm. And I said, what is that? It was kind of like my relationship with trees. My relationship with nature really blossomed. Like, mm-hmm. as a kid, I was always connected to nature, but as I got more academic, that kind of got severed. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't even have time for it.
Right.
So, but this got reawakened, and so I was drawn to this object. I asked her, I said, what is that? And she said, it's a dream pipe, which her partner, Alan Shockley, mm-hmm. who lived in Tucson and was making these, he called them dream pipes, but they're didgeridoos made out of the local cactus stock. Mm-hmm. He was the first maker of didgeridoos in the United States. It still makes them to this day. Beautiful mm-hmm. work. The best sound.
I've seen them.
Alan?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. He's the master, and he's still there doing this to this day. Beautiful soul. And so I asked her to play it for me, and she played it. And as soon as I heard the sound, and this was in 92, I had not mm-hmm. heard of the didgeridoo, ever seen one. But when I heard that sound, it was like a lock and key for me. Mm-hmm. And the word key literally is a musical term. Mm-hmm. And so the key awakened some memory in me, but not just some memory cellularly, but it connected me, or I felt that it was a window to this place that I went in my near-death mm-hmm. experience, in my awakening, which there's, you know, it's very difficult to come back from that kind of experience, and when you do, you try to get back there in some way because you're human, you're back in your limited body and all your limitations and all the world of decay, you know, and you want to get back there, even though you know you can't, and you know, but you also know that death isn't necessarily the way back there.
Right.
Because there's karma and reincarnation and all this stuff. So it's this another funny paradox. But that sound of the didgeridoo was a connection for me. And I said, I need one now. I don't care what it costs. I just need it. And so I couldn't meet up with him, her partner, so the next day. But I did, and I got one that day. And I could play it right away. I could search for the reed within a week. But not either one very skillfully, mm-hmm. because what I realized is that I didn't know how to breathe. Mm-hmm. That was number one, my biggest challenge is, and what partly I feel, you know, I came into this world, I was induced, and I think that kind of an intense, I really got into Stanislav Grof's works about rebirthing, and I've since met him, and I love him as a being in his work, and I realized, wow, you know, when I came into this world, I was contracted, you know, and I never really undid that contraction. It was like stuck in my nervous system, which included, you know, my lungs and the whole heart and all this. So I was kind of like stuck so much in my body that I just lived in my head, you know, and I was so left brain oriented, and I'm a Gemini, which is very mind oriented, can be. So, and my family is very academic and, you know, that kind of thing. So the didgeridoo for me was, and not only that, but my throat chakra wasn't very open. Yeah, I was very, and I still am shy, but my throat chakra is definitely not closed anymore. I'm still an introvert, and that's how I refuel. Mm-hmm. I go by myself. I don't refuel by people saying, you know, I love you or wonderful things. I don't get any energy from that. Yeah. I get energy by being by myself. Mm-hmm. That's the way, or nature. So, you know, the didgeridoo was showing me, I mean, it's become my greatest teacher since then, and it still is. I consider it to be the way that I connect to my heart and I connect to spirit. And so the didgeridoo was showing me how to breathe. It was teaching me how to use my breath and bring it into my body. And your breath is your spirit,
mm-hmm.
your ruach. It's your connection to spirit. Apparently, prana is more the universal energy, which rides on the breath.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the breath itself. It's energy that keeps us alive. Divine energy, cosmic energy. So we are beyond the breath, too. But it's mostly our bridge, how we as humans, pranayama and these kind of practices are what humans have discovered is our primary way to connect to spirit. and I found also to get into our heart. And so playing the didgeridoo became my mantra, my way of my pranayama. I didn't have words at the time. I just knew I needed to play this thing all the time, as much as possible, and just be in that sound. And I feel like connecting to the sound of the didgeridoo, which the Aboriginals call the sound of creation. In fact, every culture in the world has a creation story that says that sound created the world, whether it's the Om or the Nada Brahma, the sound of silence, or in the Hopi, say the spider woman tongue, the world into creation, the Mayans and the Aztecs. I mean, pretty much even in the beginning was the word. Every culture says sound created the world. And if we look at pictures of, like, cymatics, how is vibration into matter or water creates geometry, which underlies all form. Because space has a geometry, and that's the matrix from which our bodies and water and all of life is formatted. So when you're using sound, you are, even though it seems like, well, we use it as entertainment in the West, I don't at all see music or sound as entertainment, and that's not the way I use it personally. When I create it. Or even if I'm listening to music, I only like to listen to music that I feel moves me. It could be dance music, but it has to have a higher consciousness encoded with intention into that music. And that can be healing, to dance to music that's conscious, but also to create music that's conscious. And so all of these things I feel were taught to me, are being taught to me over the last 22 years by the didgeridoo. So the didgeridoo came into my life, and I had it by my side all the time. I didn't know what to do with my life, but I knew that I had to play this instrument. And just connecting and relearning how to breathe brought me to many different situations. And every day I would ask spirit, you know, where should I go? What do I do? What is my life? What do I do now? I was like a baby, fully grown person in an adult body, but a baby. And just by asking spirit, I was guided. I was guided to meet people, to go to places. I traveled to New Zealand because I was going to, like, leave U.S. back in 92. I thought U.S. was crazy. You know, and I was like, I'm getting out of sinking ship. And then I, you know, realized I wasn't supposed to go to New Zealand. I was supposed to go to Hawaii. Ended up moving to Hawaii, studied acupuncture there. And in acupuncture school, I met Jonathan Goldman, who had come and teach at the monastery I was living at and staying at a Taoist school. And he introduced me to the concept of sound therapy. And also in the Taoist school that I was at, which is a very special lineage of Taoist masters in this particular school in Oahu, they taught that before they used needles, way back, you know, because they had a huge history of healing, they use sound directed toward the meridians and the acupuncture points. And I was like, that's interesting. And then I met, you know, I was like, the didgeridoo was with me, and they were encouraging me to play music for their Qigong performances. They would go around and, it's funny, to perform Qigong, but groups of them, the students were learning this and doing this at places. And I was playing music for them. They would invite me to do that. And I started to get into other Native instruments, Native American flute. And then I met Jonathan Goldman, and I ended up kind of diverting my path. And the big split happened in the school, the acupuncture school. So I, spirit was just saying, okay, your path's changing again. And I'm like, okay, the Tao, what would water do right now? And you just flow with it, you know? So that led me to the wettest place on earth, which is Kauai, where I was living for the last 10 years before I moved to Boulder, which spirit led me here, which is hard to leave there. But in Kauai was where everything blossomed, all these new instruments that were being created by local people there, a local person in particular, my four-chamber flute. And also, there was just so, I was so healthy there. I was learning how to be in my body. I was healing so much just from the mana of the land and the, you know, living on fruit and drinking pure water and hiking into spring and being around
the ocean.
Being the ocean. I'm a river gal, so I was like in the river, hiking in the spring, drinking that water, and being around people who didn't care how you dress, didn't care how much money you have. There's a lot less ego there. So it was a beautiful chalice for me to develop my work. And that's where everything that I'm doing now blossomed. And everything that I'm doing now, including, you know, creating a sound table and the way all the elements have come step by step, not from my mind, and going out using the yang ego energy, which is what how I was trained to do it, but by letting things show up and then feeling and seeing how they fit in my life. Mm-hmm. And just it's the yinest place on earth too. Kauai is very water. So, you know, that's where this work blossomed. And then eventually I was grounded enough in the work that I could, I wouldn't say totally thrive yet, but survive living in the mainland. Because to me, the mainland, the energies here are very challenging for me, because I am a very sensitive person. But I'm meant to be here. I know that I'm meant to be here because I have a bigger purpose in life. It's not just, you know, living in Hawaii. I was working there all the time, but doing what I loved and in ceremony. But it was a little too much of a womb, you know, for what the reason I had my awakening was to show up for what I incarnated in this life to do. Because if we don't do that, I believe that's why we reincarnate.
Right.
And we're given a chance again, but we forget. We're taught to forget. Mm-hmm. And I had forgotten until my awakening when I woke up, and now the work is to stay awake, you know, to keep staying awake. That's kind of a little, I mean, that was a lot, but it was still a very little bit of how I got to where I am now.
Yeah, and it's very beautiful and very synchronistic as to how things happen for you and the people that were put in your life at certain times. I always find it very amazing how spirit and God is literally, as long as we have our eyes open, put people in front of us all the time that, you know, that have seeds of information that later blossom into something, into a whole garden. I mean, I like to see it as a garden that, you know, every person is a seed, and then when the garden blooms, it's like you have everything you need there. And that's how the Sacred Mother is she has everything we need, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm an introvert as well. I live in the mountains, very secluded, and I don't do well with lights and traffic and all of that. And every time I come to town, I'm just like, oh, man, can I please get back home? But I lived in Boulder for 20 years, and I've healing practiced here for 20 years. And so it's like my special little place. But it's like I'm always ready to go home where it's quiet and I can hear the orchestra of birds and the little animals and everything in my house.
Mm-hmm.
Could you let our listeners hear the digit and how it moves energy? Because I know that yesterday when you did the sound healing part of the conference that we also have a recording of, that you're very good at hitting those beautiful notes that blend the feminine and the masculine together so that it's like vibrating together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, you know, very yin and yang, but very fluid, I guess, is what I would say.
Mm. Well, and also yesterday, what I usually do is play the crystal bowl, which is very kind of feminine energy with a crystal dish at the same time,
right.
And that seems more masculine, but they both have the reverse to them also.
Right.
But today I don't have the crystal bowl with us. So the other thing I want to say about if we do a recording now, just that right now I'm working on a CD finally that's just crystal didgeridoo, but I've only finally gotten to the place where I feel I have engineers and a setup that can capture it appropriately, because when you have one note and the way I play is based on harmonic and very subtle frequencies, it's not about the rhythm, it's not even about the bass drone, it's about all the harmonics. To me, those are like our subtle bodies, the bodies around us that are the rainbow of who we are. So the trouble with capturing that is because the recording equipment that we have, depending on its quality, and even some of the best quality, it's very difficult to capture these frequencies. And basically, we can hear, the normal person can hear 20 to 20,000 hertz frequency range. But many of the frequencies that are coming off the dig are beyond that, and they're felt more in the body. And so beyond that, our recording equipment doesn't even always capture the 20 to 20,000 hertz range. So we'll do a recording today, but just know that it
right.
may not be capturing the full
right.
experience. So I've never really been happy with recordings of it. Although, like I said, I'm in
right.
process right now with a CD that should come out later this
and
year.
And you do have CDs and I don't know if it was a DVD with you and Dr. Andrew Watt.
That's a CD, yeah.
And can you tell people how they can contact you, get a hold of you, be able to have you come to workshops, that type of stuff? Because you have
mm-hmm.
your website. And
yes, I have a website, Gaia Earth website, www.gaiaearth. It's a combination of G-A-E-A, the old spelling of Gaia. Gaia used to be spelled instead of G-A-I-A-G-A-E-A.
Mm-hmm.
So I combined the old and the new word for Earth, Gai and Earth, Gai, G-A-E-A is the first two letters of Earth, so GaiaEarth.com. And it has samples. You can listen to some of the CDs there. All the CDs are for sale. And let's see, you had a question about Dr. Weil, the CD with him?
Yeah, and how did that come about?
So... that's a kind of a long story, but the little piece of it is that right after my awakening, I was, like I said, also I was finishing my degree, and I was like, you know, I tried to talk to my parents about it, and they were supportive and loving, but they still were like, she's off her rocker. And so I I didn't know anybody to talk to, but I had read a book by Dr. Weil called The Natural Mind.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great writer, and that book was talking about different substances that alter brainwave states and how shamans use teeth peel. And, I mean, all of his books are phenomenal, but some of his earlier ones really went into some of the more edgy stuff. That was his foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had read that book. My parents had it, and they had met him years ago. We were all in Tucson. And so he had an office at the U of A. And I was still a student. I still had one semester. I did end up graduating, still with, kept my A, you know, I don't even know how I did it, but I was able to maintain my GPA and graduate. But one day I was like, okay, I better talk to Dr. Weil. He'll understand me.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked up to his secretary and I said, I need to talk to Dr. Weil. She's like, who are you? And I'm like, I'm a student here. She's like, okay. So anyway, she disappeared and went and talked to him for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I had no appointment and whatever. I was just falling spirit, saying, go to talk to him. So she said, here he is. And I went in and I told him my story. And he very patiently listened to me. And I could tell he really got it. Like he was a kindred
mm-hmm.
soul.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point, he became my ally. And we didn't end up doing the CD together until I had actually progressed along my path further, because that
mm-hmm.
was in 93.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't to the point grounded in being able to do anything professionally for a good 10 years.
Yeah.
And by that time, synchronicity brought us back together through Sound True, and he had reached out to them to connect with me, and we ended up doing the CD together. Well, we've done four now,
mm-hmm.
but that first one we did, Self Healing with Sound and Music, and he's done a whole series of CDs with Sound True. That became his best-selling CD.
Right.
So that one really went far, and that was a great collaboration because we're totally kindred spirits. But so that's how we met, and the great thing about that was when my parents realized that he was taking me under his wing, in a sense, they're like, okay, maybe she's not crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, then you have a big authority that has some credentials behind his name. That's what it takes for, you know, the mind, at least,
mm-hmm.
to understand. And I understand that they were worried about me because I was really a different person.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way that I think was more who I really am.
Right.
Not who I was cultured to be by the society
mm-hmm.
and by the family and all of my blockages and all the stuff
mm-hmm.
that is just like I was buried somewhere underneath
mm-hmm.
there. And since that awakening in 92, the flowering started.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I'm fully in bloom,
mm-hmm.
but at least I'm going in that direction where I think I was wilting at that point. I was really, I mean, that's why I had that experience. I was ready to die on some
mm-hmm.
level. I wanted out of this world at age 21, without even thinking of it. It wasn't like suicide or anything like that. But so my mission in part is also to inspire others to find their heart, because our mind is so dominant, and then your heart is what you're here to do. It carries your seed of your dharma, why you came here, and that's what's going to bring you success, happiness, and health, whatever that looks like, success. But all the other things come from us showing up in this world of density and following our heart. This is what Joseph Campbell said, in, you know, after studying every culture in the world and all these myths and the hero's journey, if you don't follow your heart, or what did Jesus say, you know, if you don't do that which is within you, that which is within you will destroy you, because you know you're not living what you, and it, that's why people develop cancer, not necessarily always, but I think in part dis-ease is there's an inner disharmony of vibration of our soul and our spirit and our body, and they're not all linked up, and our mind, you know, and they're just not in harmony together. And so for me, sound is my medicine, it always has been, but bringing it out to serve others is, you know, they say we teach best what we most need to learn. You know, this is how I find my way. This is how I've always found my way. And not everyone is music. It might be art. It might be cooking. It might be gardening.
Right.
Everyone has their thing. It might be accounting.
Right.
You know, it might be being a nurse. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and we're not only always one thing.
Right.
Just because I do music therapy doesn't mean that's all I do.
Right.
You know, but we all have... It's like a place where we come from in our life. And as long as we devote enough time to that one thing that gives us life, that also serves others, because we're all here symbiotically to serve each other. And that's how I feel we'll bring back the golden age, is when we work together symbiotically. You know, that's how fractally stages of evolution work. You know, all we're made up of bacteria working together. Bacteria was the first form of life on the planet. And, I mean, this is what I studied, molecular biology. That's why I studied it, because I have this, you know, everything happens for a reason.
Right.
I don't disregard why I went into the sciences and even prep for medical school. All of that, I saw this in my near-death experience, like, everything's perfect. And everything can only ever be perfect. And the only thing is that we forget that. And that's what I had forgotten, the perfection of life. And even now, it's been 22 years now, I forget sometimes when I resent or say something happens. And, you know, it is really, really a challenge in this world of density, in third density, to remember that perfection, which is what was shown in these when we go back to source, God consciousness. But that's always, I was shown in that state that is always here. It's always, every second, at every moment, perfect. And if we could just all help each other remember that, then we'll have, you know, peace on earth, basically.
Yeah, because if we're more peaceful with ourselves and more compassionate to others and to the world and to the Sacred Mother, I mean, I believe that we can regenerate anything. It's this constant chaos, drama stuff that is like the undercurrent that, and people are wondering why they're uncomfortable. And I think they're finding now is, like, they're searching, like the Searcher's Roadmap, this show. They're searching to find something that's not what society says you should be doing. You know, they want that mystical freedom of being able to find their higher power in their place. You know, I think with this show, it brings a lot of enlightenment to people around the world so that they know that there are a lot of different things you can do, and they don't all have to be from one culture or another. You can mix and blend and do whatever you want anymore now that it's the Rainbow Bridge time that, you know, Black Elk spoke of and Joseph Campbell spoke of, that, you know, all the cultures will be coming together and sharing their information. And it's actually happening, and it's beautiful.
And I think underneath that is the remembrance that, you know, the Tower of Babel and Babylon. To me, what that means, I know there's many layers to that, but it's all the diversity of languages, all the diversity of colors, of genders, I mean, even genders, but races, they seem different, the languages, mm-hmm. our religion. But in this Kali Yuga, the time of forgetting, you know, the Iron Age of this whole era, we forgot that it's all the one. It's only all the one ever. And that's what people who have, not just me, but people who have near-death experiences, mm-hmm. this is the primary message of remembering. And babies remember this. They just can't talk.
Right.
That's the problem. And by the time they can talk, they're kind of forgetting already. Well, they don't even have the language for it.
Right.
But so all the different races and religions, the coming together is the recognition that we're all saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we in the battle of the many, we, you know, blah, 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 and all the, you know, the forgetting is falling away now into this remembrance of unity. And I kind of see it like the sunrise. You know,
yeah.
it's just the sun is rising, and according to the Toltec mm-hmm. teachings, this is the dawn of the sixth sun. Mm-hmm. We're in it between 2012 and 2021.
Yes.
And this is the time to just, there's practices I've been actually learning about a lot more lately. Cleanse your shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Release, and there's very specific techniques for doing this, but and from different cultures. Yeah. But I love the Toltec; it's very practical. But you know, so as we release the shadow, which is happening naturally, but that can also, I think, it can happen more gracefully if we co-create mm-hmm. with the process in motion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a death, but that death doesn't have to be physical,
right?
Because we are immortal beings,
mm-hmm.
and we can actually transcend death physically. Not that that's the only way, or it has to be if you're perfect or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but that's an option. And we need to remember that that's also an option, collectively and mm-hmm. individually. And so if we do these practices of releasing our shadow, individually, collectively, and forgiving them, letting them go, mm-hmm. just let them go, compost them for the new growth that's coming, as the new sun rises, we will become, according to the Toltec word, is Quetzalcoatl, which is another word for Christ,
mm-hmm.
another word for Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same language, that we are all destined and potentially now to become Christed beings. This is possible, and this is a huge cycle that we
yeah.
are completing, not only the Kali Yuga, but there's the Toltec and the Mayan cycle.
Mm-hmm.
These are
exactly.
vast cycles of time that we're in now, and that the potential, and also there's the Law of One material, I don't know if you know that, the raw material, they're saying we're moving into the fourth density, which is also another same way, another language
mm-hmm.
from this higher dimensional sixth density group, the raw, who came
mm-hmm.
apparently during Egypt and
mm-hmm.
delivered their teaching, but we weren't ready then, that right now, there's the same timeline too, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
We're shifting. Earth, in fact, the whole planet
mm-hmm.
is shifting into a new frequency.
Exactly.
Which is a new sun, which is a new era, which is a new yuga.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same language. We're all the one being. And what the I love the Ram Chokas, because they say, well, you know, when you come down into third density from these higher frequency densities, you kind of forget.
Mm-hmm.
You just forget. And that's just part of the learning process. And so we're in the process now of remembering, bringing the pieces back together.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, music is my way to remember my origin.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, I don't feel Earth is really my origin. I don't know if anybody is, but personally, they say know thyself. That's been my process.
Mm-hmm.
How to know myself. I feel like I'm from the stars, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I'm only comfortable now saying that, and I don't say it from an egotistical way, because I totally am open to the possibility that everybody is from their own constellation,
right.
you know, and that we're all visiting here, I mean, on this potential cauldron of free will, very special learning ground on Earth. But as long as if I can identify with my solar identity, with my
mm-hmm.
star, a sun is a star,
yeah.
we are all star beings, somehow that's part of the remembering process. You remember we are not our physical bodies. We are not our egos. And when I play the didgeridoo, for more than any, I play a lot of other instruments, but and I love them all, but more than any, the didgeridoo is my way to reconnect to my home.
Mm-hmm.
My home is not necessarily a physical place, it's a metaphysical place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I use music.
And music is an amazing comforter, I think, as far as, you know, anxiety, any type of disease, disorder. You know, it brings that nurturing comfort, you know, that that you only find in music. I was raised Mennonite when I was young, and we didn't really watch TV or anything. We always played instruments and did a lot of music stuff and dances on the weekends and that kind of stuff on the ranch. And music is one of those things where it's just so beautiful and so subtle, you know, when it's opening, like you said, the key, because music can open keys and people's, you know, awareness. And then it makes it, you know, a very personal situation for them that when they hear those sounds and they have their endorphins and dopamine and everything change again, you know. And I find that very beautiful that all these things work together, you know, and they're all synchronistic. And it doesn't, you know, and in the black and white world of society, everything have duality. They all want to separateness when actually the blending is what makes it so powerful.
That's why music is I love it as a medium of communion and communication, because it's a universal language. It transcends all the babble of the different language barriers. You can speak to anyone from any culture on this planet and maybe beyond. Like, remember Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
Exactly.
That kind of thing. It's a universal language. And when you, and what also I love about that is it bypasses the mind. And because the mind in the phase of evolution we're in right now is so dominant, the head mind, not the heart mind or the gut mind, we're in the head mind. And because it bypasses that. And I love how the word hear is also heart, if you just add a T on the end. And so, you know, when you listen, it goes right to your heart. And so that's one of the benefits of using music as a way to communicate, not just to people, but to people's hearts, you know, bypassing all the other stuff.
Do you work with children much and see that they really resonate with music?
Yeah, they do. And usually they're the, when I teach didgeridoo workshops, they're the fastest learners. They get it, you know, and it's because it's not the circular breathing and the primary tone and fundamental isn't difficult to do. It's something that is very natural to us. But it requires a way of thinking that is very childlike. It's very, it's a place before our conditioning. And I think when our mind gets polarized in the way that we've been trained, we as Westerners at least, which is very dominant on the planet, even though more so in, let's say, the United States. But it's something that we have to unlearn. You know, playing the didgeridoo, circular breathing, it's very, people think, it takes so much. You know, I mean, there is some muscular, diaphragmatic, and lung capacity work involved, but it's not tiring work. In fact, I get energy from playing. And so children tend to be, they understand that. They have less to unlearn.
Right.
And not just didgeridoo, but other instruments.
Right.
You know, and they've shown that when children are exposed to any kind of music or drumming, playing or listening, that their IQs are much higher, they're more balanced emotionally. I mean, there's been very good research done. And so I highly encourage, and in China and many ancient cultures, they would sing to the baby in the womb and play classical music, you know, to the womb. So even while the fetus and the brain is developing before birth, these children come out amazingly intelligent. And the reason is when they do research on the brain and they hook up all the different parts of your brain on the, like, EKGs, they show that when you listen to music or create music, your whole brain is involved. And there is pretty much almost very few, if any, other activities that we do or experience that do that.
That activates the whole brain.
The whole brain simultaneously. And so the cross between the corpus callosum, the right and left brain synchronization, is really a higher evolutionary state. And that's when we're, if we use more of our whole brain at once, we're using our higher faculties. And this is where we're going as a species. We need to use more of our higher faculties. So we can, like Einstein said, problems cannot be solved on the level in which they were created. What does the level mean? That means, well, in the consciousness with which they were created. And so we need to use our not just our brains, but our it's like the there's a higher part of ourselves that get activated that I believe is also related to the pineal gland, which all the ancient cultures say too, and that connects us to spirit. It's like the bridge between the medulla oblongata in the back of the head. If we're using all these parts coherently, coherence is the key, then we access something bigger than ourselves. And that's how I think we're going to deal with Fukushima and GMOs and chemtrails and the virus on our planet right now, which I do see, even you know, from a fractal level, an alien invasion is a virus. Well, our bodies get viruses. You know, we get tuberculosis or whatever. A planet, which is a living sentient being, Gaia, she get a virus. So you got to kick it off, right? You get a virus, you got to kick it out of your system because they don't belong there.
Right.
That's how I see it. It's not good or bad. Is a virus bad? Is a virus evil? It just doesn't belong there.
Right.
It's not good for the system. So we have to, as a species, wake up to the fact that our dear planet, those of us who are part of the symbiosis of the planet, should, and even if we have virus DNA merged into our blood or our body structure, we are more than our DNA. Our spirits are more than our DNA. So if we connect to the spirit of the planet, then I think we can solve all of our problems from the higher mind, not just individually, but the higher mind collectively, using this higher level of perception that knows how to deal with whatever we're presented with. Transmute it. Like, we're alchemists. Everything is alchemy. So we have to take all this darkness, which isn't bad, it just doesn't serve our evolution anymore. We learned these lessons.
Right.
Hopefully. I mean, that's what I see. Okay, we're ready to move on. So last year's compost, you know, it just, it goes into the ground and we mulch it. And then from that grows the golden age, the new era.
The new seed and the new wisdom that needs to come forth so that we can continue to heal the planet. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, and I see that, you know, the whole concept with the Toltec and Mayan and all these different calendars that have foretold this golden age to come, you know, and that it was going to change, you know, the way people look at things. And I see that people are pulling back from so much of the material part and wanting to find that spiritual part, that peace within, that heart space that society doesn't teach you to go there. Society teaches you that that's a bad place. You know, just to, you know, don't listen to your gut, you know, do this, think with your head. And what I found, you know, is that when you listen to your gut, you usually are more right, you know, if you slow down enough. And I think that's the other thing, is that we're being encouraged to slow down enough to be able to hear spirit.
Well, I think if my vision with many others is that if we reach a critical mass of beings who are doing this work, that, I mean, and this is a phenomenon in physics that repeats itself. If you reach a certain, like in chemical reactions, you have a certain number of molecules that are combined with a certain number of other molecules. It doesn't have to be all the molecules involved in this, these two combining, just a certain number, and it's usually a fraction of it, and it's a regular repeating pattern. This happened with, you know, the 100 monkey syndrome is a reported case, but this is a, it's like a cosmic principle of sorts. And so, you know, like Gandhi said, be the change, right? We can go out there and protest GMOs and do all this stuff, and I think there's part of that is helpful and good and right, but even more important probably right now is that we use most of our energy to be the change, to make ourselves fulfill our highest potential, which is ultimately become an enlightened being, and that seems all lofty to talk about, but it's what all the ancient sages and masters have taught us. Like, you have an infinite number of lifetimes to figure this out, but you will reincarnate until you do it. So it's not a big lofty thing. It's like, get on it, is what they're saying, unless you like reincarnating, which personally I feel a little bit done with it.
Yeah.
I think that would be my wish, but you know, I'm working. But the point is that if enough people reach at least a certain level where we can have this, it's like we create fields of energy when we come together in circles, when we pray together, when we vision together, when we remember together, conspire, breathe together. that if enough people globally, and there are a lot of people really on it, you know, and I feel that, you know, in when I study Taoism, they say the wise sage does nothing, but nothing is left undone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this paradox. It's like, so, okay, is the golden age just going to come about naturally, or do we have to create it? And it's somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found through my awakening and my life journey is that if you follow your heart, there's some place of passion there. And by passion, it's not a sexual term.
Mm-hmm.
It can be, but it's really a place of where you're inspired, inspired to breathe in spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that, when you find that place and you live from that place, you will be guided as to where to put your energy. You might be inspired to protest fluoride in the water, or you might be inspired to help someone in that moment, or whatever that is. It could be an infinite number of possibilities. But that, I think, is how we follow spirit, which is our higher self, which is guiding us, our individual and collective higher self. And that is what will guide us how to create the golden age. So there is work to be done on ourselves and in our world. And there's also a lot of being to do, like a lot of stopping and meditating and checking in with ourselves and allowing our body to equilibrate with the cosmos and the earth.
Exactly.
Because from that place, we're much more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of this fine line of doing and not doing, of like, where do we, how do we use our energy? And it's a razor's edge. You know, that's part of the earth dance is finding that Tao, you know, or Dan, you know, yin, yang, and Dan.
Yes.
And that place is what will guide us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're doing that. We're doing that, and I have a lot of faith in where we're going as a species.
Well, we're at the end of our hour, and this is the Searcher's Roadmap. We are broadcasting from Boulder, Colorado at the Marriott Hotel at the second annual cross-cultural conference. We've had Kimba Arams with us this evening or this afternoon from Boulder, and she's a sound healer. She has an amazing experience with sound and music, and she shares it with the world. Please return to the show. It regularly airs on Fridays, but from here on out over the summer, we'll be doing special airings, and the next one is going to be at the University of New Mexico from July 13th to July 25th, where we'll be interviewing curanderos and other healers from all over the world during a two-week hands-on workshop that the University of New Mexico has done for the last 14 years. And there is an archive. You can listen to these shows at any time and download them and share them with friends. And, you know, and if you want to rehear it 10 years from now, it will still be there, and it will activate the same way as if it was your first time calling in. So bless you, create a wonderful day, and thank you for listening.
The moderator has left the conference.